The first time Kieran adjusted my posture, he didn't use his hands, he used his eyes, stripping back my professional armor until I felt like a draft of a person. He was still editing. I was the senior project lead for a TL1 civil engineering firm in London, a Trinidadian woman who had survived enough sidewalks and boardrooms to know when a man was trying to undermine her. But Kieran was different. He didn't interrupt me in meetings. He leaned in, nodding, making me feel like the only person in the building who understood the structural integrity of the bridge we were building and the structural integrity of his own loneliness. It started with mentorship sessions that bled past 8 p.m. We weren't in a dingy office. We were in the glass-walled fishbowl of the executive suite, the London skyline twinkling like scattered diamonds against the black. He was the managing director, a silver-tongued Irishman with a way of making we sound like a secret pact. He didn't threaten my job. He did something worse. He made me believe that my rapid ascent was fueled by our special connection rather than my 16-hour days. He seduced the situation until the line between a promotion and a proposition vanished. The first night we crossed the line, it didn't feel like a mistake. It felt like an inevitable climax to a high-stakes deal. He told me I was brilliant, untamed, and the only one he could trust. By the time I was waking up in his high thread count sheets, I realized I hadn't just climbed the corporate ladder. I had climbed into a gilded cage. The entanglement turned toxic the moment I asked for the paperwork on the lead director role I'd been promised. We were in his kitchen, the smell of expensive espresso filling the air, and I was wearing one of his dress shirts. I brought up the Q3 targets. I brought up my merit. Kieran's face didn't get angry. It got cold. He put down his mug and looked at me with a terrifying clinical detachment. "You really want to talk about merit now, Alana?" he asked, his Irish accent thickening just enough to sound like a warning. "After everything I've given you, after the way we've spent our time, people will talk. They'll say you didn't earn that title with your spreadsheets." He wasn't protecting me from the gossip. He was the one who had started it. I realized then that he had been managing me the entire time. The sex wasn't a byproduct of the job. It was the tool he used to ensure I could never claim my own success. If I took the promotion, I was the office girl who slept her way up. If I left, I had nothing. He punished me for wanting dignity by making my dignity the very thing I had to trade away. He started CC Junior Associates on my private memos, subtly questioning my focus during morning briefings, all while sending me I miss you texts at midnight. It was a psychological pincer movement. He wanted me small, compliant, and perpetually grateful for the crumbs of power he let me hold. But he forgot one thing about Trinidadian women. We know how to weather a storm, and we know exactly how to rebuild after the flood. I didn't quit. I didn't cry. I started recording the mentorship sessions. I started biding my time, waiting for the one moment where his arrogance would outweigh his caution. The point of no return came during the annual stakeholders gala. He tried to touch the small of my back in front of the chairman, a proprietary gesture that told the whole room I belonged to him. I didn't flinch. I leaned in and whispered the exact offshore account number I'd found buried in the bridge's procurement files, the one where the extra concrete money was going. "The bridge has a flaw, Kieran," I whispered, my voice as steady as the steel beams I'd spent my life studying. "And so does your management style." I saw the colour drain from his face. The seduction was over. The hunt had begun. And for the first time in a year, I wasn't the one being managed.